Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Peter Paul Barzola. I'm still got this cold, but you know, we gotta get under the harness and we all have to pull our own weight. Well, that's our theme, the March to the Scaffold by Hector Berlioz from the Symphonie Fantastique. And today we may see some politicians and mounting the political scaffold. And hopefully the guillotine will come down very quickly on some of them. They've been around too long and they don't know when to leave the stage, or we don't have anybody there with the crook except the electorate. And, of course, in June we have primary here in California. Some of the sleaziest, corrupt people are running. But their camera will catch up with them. excuse me, still have this cold, and I think it's allergies. So we'll do our usual, the events today in world history. The Seven-Year War started with the British and the French, or the English and the French, and the result of it was the wars with these, between those two countries, was that the French lost Canada. And one of the reasons they lost Canada, the French were not like the English. Whenever the English used to discover land or land there, they immediately waved their flag over it and conquered it in the name of the king or the queen. The French didn't have that acquisition mentality like the British, and they didn't populate Canada, even though Jacques Cartier discovered it back in the 15th century. And, of course, Hudson's Bay was discovered by, I believe, a Dutchman, or maybe working with the English. But anyway, they didn't populate it, and one of the reasons that the British won Canada or lost, and the French lost it, was because there weren't enough people up there. Also, today, in 1642, I think it was, the city of Montreal was founded. Some of my teachers in boarding school were from them. I learned pigeon French and since forgotten it. And today, in 1804, Napoleon Bonaparte became Emperor of the French. And, of course, he ended up, the British defeated him at Waterloo, and he ended up first on Elba, and he escaped, and then at Waterloo after that battle, they shipped him off to St. Helena, very remote, even further from France. If you ever get to Paris, I recommend that you go to the Place, the main plaza there, and the Chapel of the Invalids. It's just so beautiful with the stained glass and all of the great French military. There's Vauban, the great engineer, and then there's Marshal Foch, and then there's Napoleon's tomb in the center. You can go on the web and look at this also, but it's just something to see. It's called the Chapel of the Invalids, and also it's also the French Pentagon, their version of the Pentagon. So it's something to see if you get over there, if the volcano doesn't spread any further and curtail flights. Since we're in the military aspect, in 1917, and this is very important for all these young men who didn't register for the Selective Service, even though there's no military draft currently. But in 1917, Woodrow Wilson, to fight World War I, instituted Selective Service. Now, they don't pay attention to this, but there may be a lot of young males who have not registered for Selective Service. And if the issue is pushed that they are barred from student loans, housing, elective office, and they, besides being prosecuted, and we may have a few here in San Francisco. Also, did you know that some Selective Service records are online? There was a fire, I think, in 1965 or 66 at the National Archives or the Federal Archives, I think in St. Louis. Whether it was done by Bill Ayers and that crowd or weathermen, we don't know. But that did happen during the Vietnam War. Also today, in 1944, the great monastery, the Benedictine Monastery of Monte Cassino, there was a battle up there, and it's one of the famous news videos of history of the war in World War II in Italy. There was also World War I. But what was interesting was the Germans respected these old architectural gems, like the great monastery up there, and the Allies made a mistake of bombing it and turning it into rubble, which made it very good for the Germans to hide behind and to fight the Allies, General Mark Clark and the New Zealanders, who were, and I think Brigadier Ingalls was the Bengal Lancers, his division was also involved in the fight in Italy. And it was very difficult for them to retake Monte Cassino and kick the Nazi, the Wehrmacht out. And then in 1955, the first Indo-Chinese war stopped, and about, I think it was over 100,000 Vietnamese, North Vietnamese, fled to the south, and then a lot of them managed to come over here after the defeat of the United States pulled out during the Nixon administration. And we're seeing second and third Vietnamese now coming into our professions, our political life. I think Republican representative from Louisiana who voted for health care for the Pelosi thing, I think it's accurate. He's Vietnamese ethnic. I don't know if he was born over there or over here. I didn't look it up. Also today is the birthday, some interesting birthdays. 1868, Tsar Nicholas II, the last of the Romanov emperors, czars, was born, and then he was executed, depends how you look at it, by the Bolsheviks, the communists, at Ekaterinburg. And the whole Romanov family was, most of them, the Tsar's direct family was wiped out. The queen mother, or the empress dowager, she escaped. And I think the grand prince, or the grand duke, his brother, he escaped to Paris. A lot of them went to France. The Russians have this thing about Paris and France. And also after the Russian Revolution, a lot of artists and people like Chagall, Prokofiev all went to Paris. Prokofiev did go back. I don't know why anybody wanted to go back. But anyway, that's what, I guess their heart was still in the steppes. And then today is the birthday of Bertrand Russell, the controversial and great British philosopher. And some interesting musicians and, of course, architects and movie people. For instance, Enzio Pinza. Those of you remember the original South Pacific, and he's also an opera singer. He could not read music, as I recall. I'm pretty sure I'm accurate on this, but he learned everything by ear. And he was discovered, he was singing in the shower after a bicycle meet, and some impresario heard him and got his career started. And he played the French planter in the South Pacific, and then he sang Boris Godunov in Italian, get this, during the war. During World War II, the Metropolitan Opera gave discounts or practical, I think, free seating and performances for our servicemen. And a lot of the German Jews and the Austrian Jews who escaped became conductors and singers at the Metropolitan Opera. But the greatest Wagnerian opera singer of all time, Kirsten Flagstad, she was Norwegian. Her husband got stuck in Norway. She decided to go back, and a lot of people never forgave her for going back because Norway was occupied by the Nazis. Then the great British pianist, who's related to the diplomatic family, Lord Curzon, Clifford Curzon, was born today. Also, the great Russian Jewish black bass, they call it, one of the deepest voices, Boris Christoph, who played Boris Godunov, he was born today. And then those of us who appreciate good architecture and hate this, what we call Bauhaus, Walter Gropius was born today. And then, those of you who had opals, the guy who invented the opal, he was born today. And then, again, getting back to World War II, the famous series Why We Fight was produced by Frank Capra. He was born today. I understand he was a supporter of Mussolini, or at least he liked him. That may or may not be true. I should check that again. But he also did some 30s films, a lot of great films with social relevance came out during the 30s, And I think he did one or two with Jimmy Stewart, one of my favorite actors, who also was a general in the Air Force. He was a great guy. He served his country well. Unfortunately, a lot of these clowns don't today. And then among the ugly events, we have the Crusaders in 1096 massacring a lot of Jews at Worms. I think that's in Germany. And then I said in 1642, Montreal was founded, and then the British took it when after they defeated the French on the Plains of Abraham in the French and Indian War, which George Washington also participated in. A lot of people don't know that. And then we have the guy who invented the lawnmower, Edward Budding. He got his patent to manufacture lawnmowers, and it's changed Saturdays ever since. Now, I've seen some women use lawnmowers, and we have progressed to the automotive type that you sit on them and mow the lawn. Not good for your heart. And then since the U.S. Supreme Court is back in the news, it's never out of the news actually. In 1896. The first of the segregation decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court, Plessy versus Ferguson, very famous case, where the U.S. Supreme Court said there could be separate facilities, but they had to be equal to the white facilities. And that was finally overturned with the Warren Court, I think in 1964, with the civil rights movements. Incidentally, Warren was, he was one who anglicized his name. He was actually, of Scandinavian ethnicity, I think he was Norwegian, and his son was a judge here in California. Earl Warren was also the governor of California when the Japanese were forcibly removed after Pearl Harbor, and he regretted going along with that. His grandson, James Warren, was involved in the Steve Nary case, which you can go to the web, Nary, and look him up, and he's also on our YouTube site, Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas. We just put up another video today, the Beta Breakers 2010, which has become an Animal House orgy, drunkenness, drugs, urination, defecation, nudity, and it's a warning to other cities look to what San Francisco doesn't do is police these things or the people who finance and sponsor them, because if a lot of these kids come here and drink, in fact, Coors Light was the beer of choice. So we've got some videos and we'll put them up, the new Shadow and myself. And if one of these participants, this is a warning, gets involved in an accident and injures or kills somebody, it's a question of liability to the sponsors, because they don't monitor this marathon, and there's just rampant drunkenness and, of course, the urination and defecation that follows. But we had the pictures, and it was like 6 tons of garbage that was collected the next day. It's just a mess. It's just become a wild Animal House type of thing with a bunch of kids from out of town who come here to party in the streets and take off their clothes and all of that. And in 1933, this is relevant to the people in Tennessee, FDR's administration initiated the Tennessee Valley Administration to provide electrification to rural areas in the Tennessee Valley. And, of course, now they've undergone this horrible storm and hurricane and flooded out a lot down there. Of course, they may be undergoing a political flood if Ron Paul's son wins in the primary down there, the Tea Party people. The people will be swimming in tea. And then also one of the most famous and infamous kidnapping cases, the Lindbergh baby, who was kidnapped by this this ethnic German was accused of kidnapping this the Lindbergh baby, and the baby died. This was a classic case of judicial misconduct and railroading. We don't really know if he was guilty of the kidnapping and if he was the only one participating. Interestingly, the head of the New Jersey State Police was General Norman Schwarzkopf's father. So remember Storm and Norman, who was the commanding general in the first Iraq war under the first Bush administration. And then today, also 1953, this is one for the women, the first woman, Jacqueline Cochran, broke the sound barrier. So hip hip hooray for them. And this is interesting, and it's still play, again, the U.S. Supreme Court is always going to be in the news, especially with these illegal alien and immigration and migrant issues. And, of course, we'll get into the definition of what is immigration, what is emigration. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional to deprive U.S. naturalized citizens of their U.S. citizenship if those naturalized citizens returned to their home country and didn't return to the United States after 3 years, so they could stay forever. In fact, because of the financial situation, a lot of more and more Americans find that their dollar will go further if they retired to, say, Poland or Mexico, Ireland. I don't know about Ireland these days, but this is what a lot of Americans have done. I don't hear any that are going back to China or to, say, the Soviet Union, except people like Solzhenitsyn and Svetlana Stalin. But I know several Poles, and we have some of my in-laws, Polish, who have retired to Poland. Now, given the financial situation in Europe, I don't know if they're going to stay there. But some of these people were naturalized, and they retired there, and they don't intend to come back. In fact, they can't afford to come back because of the plane fare. And then this is interesting for people who are concerned about how we are becoming American, native-born Americans becoming strangers in their own country. In California, unless they change it, I will check again the last time I looked, which was last year, that you can attend, a foreigner can attend law school here. There's no problem with that. And he can also, if he passes the California State Bar, which is a lot of BS anyway, incredible incompetence, who should be keep passing the bar. They don't have to be a U.S. citizen to practice law in California. I've heard this may be the situation in other states. They are not talking about it. But I know one guy from Belgium who was a public defender here, and he was one of the few people in that public defender's office to challenge the homosexual agenda in the district attorney's office. These homosexuals have taken over, and anybody who's accused of a crime against a homosexual or a lesbian or a transgendered or a NAMBLA gets railroaded. They don't get a fair trial even when there is jurisdiction. There wasn't jurisdiction in the Stephen Nery case, and we'll get into that more and more because there's so much in this case. It goes back now almost 15 years. And it's cost the American taxpayer an estimated $15 million. $10 million of that went to build this monument, AIDS project, to an illegal alien, a homosexual predator, neo-Nazi from Argentina. Couldn't even return to his own country. And he made disparaging remarks about various ethnic groups, whether they were black or Hispanic, Asian, or Jews. Let's see, what else do we have today? So those people who are thinking of these marathons, starting them, you ought to be look at what's going on in San Francisco. This is a good beacon, a warning. A lot of things start here. Unfortunately, they don't get finished here. To look out for the liability if there's a lot of drinking on drugs, which we're seeing more of now. And here in the San Francisco Beta Breakers, this was the 99th one. The question is, do the sponsors of these marathons, will they have liability if somebody gets hurt? Now, there is the Dram Shop Act, where anybody who provides alcohol to underage people or anybody who gets in an accident or injures or kills somebody, the person who provided the alcohol and should have cut the drinker off is liable. So it's something to think about. People don't think about these things until they get hit with a lawsuit. So ignorance is not bliss. What you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you, and will. And there's still lawyers out there who just love these cases, and they'll beat a path to the clerk's office to file a lawsuit against you and try to get all your assets. So it pays to be vigilant and to protect yourself from these predators with bar cards and people who are looking for an easy buck. One of the things that the media people, they keep using the phrase illegal immigrant. What is the definition of an immigrant? It used to be an immigrant, I-M-M-I-G-R-A-N-T, was somebody who was coming here from another country to become a U.S. citizen, or if they're going to Canada, to Canadian citizen. Now, there's a little twist there. I know people who couldn't get into the United States because of the quota. They were otherwise eligible and qualified, but because of the quota, they weren't allowed in that year. So what they did was they went up to Canada for a year or two. In fact, we had relatives from Asia who did that, and fortunately they were professionals, doctors, and the lawyer couldn't practice up there. But he did that, the family did that, and then after 2 years, they immigrated to the United States, became U.S. citizens. I think my cousin went into the military. I haven't talked to him in years. But that's what some people used to do. But traditionally, the term immigrant, I-M-M-I-G-R-A-N-T, meant somebody who was coming here to become a citizen. Now, what's been going on, and they do not, some media people, O'Reilly, I wish Hannity would correct his language and be aware of this, are starting to use the term illegal alien and migrant, which is what these people are who are coming here, not to become U.S. citizens. They're not beating a path to the voter registrar's office. They're coming here because there's not enough work or no work in their home country, and they can't feed their families because of the economic mess that the companies and the economic predators who have ruined the economies of these countries are their own leaders, like Batista in Cuba. A lot of these South American tin horn dictators have ripped off their own people, and they've got these fat Swiss bank accounts and live quite well abroad after they were either forced out or they retired with their country's, a lot of their country's assets. So, and they haven't developed or couldn't develop the native resources, the natural resources in their particular country. So these people come up here, and you should go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. It's A-M-I-C-U-S-V-E-R-I-T-A-S. We are doing a, the Shadow and I are doing a series and some other people on how these illegal aliens survive in an urban area. It's quite interesting, and these people are very resourceful. You got to hand them that. And they're not coming here to become U.S. citizens. And then when you leave a country, it's spelled E-M-I-G-R-A-N-T, to emigrate. So we need to speak proper English and get these terms right, because the people, these media people, these politicians, and these pro-illegal alien advocates who have their own agenda keep using the term, and if they keep pushing it on the public's consciousness, will begin to think that these illegals are actually immigrants, and they're not. Also, I think this was Richard Daley II, the mayor of Chicago, I understand he's in deep doo-doo, tried to allow the immigrants who were not U.S. citizens, who had children, who were in the Chicago school district schools, which are pretty bad, to allow these people to vote in school board elections. We cannot allow that. You know, once they get their foot in the door, the butt follows. So no way. And, you know, no voting for people who are not citizens. We've got to protect our most precious franchise. People have been killed because they tried to vote and because they wanted an honest election in foreign countries. We don't have to give ours away. It's bad enough. And also, here's another thing that you need to be aware of. This guy, Leland Yee, he's got a doctorate. He was on the San Francisco Unified School Board, one of the controversial and some say corrupt school board members, who is now in the state legislature. He's a career politician, and he's trying to get a law passed that will allow people to register on election day and to vote after they registered. And, of course, if they're illegals, and this has happened, and this absentee ballot voting, they'll register and vote illegally, illegally register, illegally vote, and we won't find them the day after. And, you know, we have the conservative commentators and other people saying we've got to take back the Congress and the country in November. Well, if we don't prepare to have and ensure as have as honest elections as we possibly can, then on Wednesday people are going to be saying how the hell it happened. So be aware now. We've got time to prevent this voter fraud. They've done it before. The radical gays, the lavender left, as we called, they were bragging in 1990, called the lavender sweep. That was the term that they used. And what happened was that's how we got all these homosexuals, lesbians, NAMBLAs, and transgenders in San Francisco's public offices and in the California state legislature. And they also helped get people like Barbara Boxer, Nancy Pelosi, who's from Baltimore, she is not a San Franciscan, and other political flotsam, as I call it, term I coined, got them elected, you know, and through vote fraud. And how the vote fraud happened, and you should go to our other site, Californians Against Voter Fraud. It's dated, but we documented how illegals were voting, and not only that, how they were able to vote, how the dead voted. And, of course, we hear that all across the country. It doesn't only happen in New York and Chicago and Boston, but it was rampant out here. In fact, I did, when I was researching my book on the presidents, we discovered that vote fraud goes in California goes back to the Gold Rush period, and they invented a thing called the tapeworm ballot. I'll get into that next in the coming weeks on some of the interesting aspects of voter fraud. We have been proposing that people be required to have photographic identification on a voter registration card and maybe a thumbprint. They do it in all these other countries, that once you vote, you have to put, before you can vote, you have to slap your thumb down on a piece of paper that they keep in a registry. I don't like the idea any more government intervention in what should be private, but you can't trust these people anymore who want to get their illegals into the voter registrar's office on the rolls and to be voting. And what happened in the absentee ballot, and this is something else that people should be looking at, not only did they register out of office buildings, and we have all that documented, we even have copies of their voter registration cards, what they were doing was doing an absentee ballot. They would register first, say like in July for the November election. They would ask for an absentee ballot, which the way they were given, they would use an address of a place that they didn't live and never lived and wouldn't live, and then they'd vote, and then they'd disappear. And we saw this happen in the Gore election, presidential election, and where they had where the term Macarena was coined. And what happened in Southern California, Acorn and some of these other outfits were registering people down in Los Angeles and Southern California, getting an absentee ballot. Then they were busing them up to Northern California and doing the same thing, and then they disappeared. So you need to protect the most precious franchise that you have. And we are going to end with the appropriate theme.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got to pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Impulse.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet out.
Politics and poker.
Peter Paul Borzola, working with the New Shadow. Thank you for listening, and tune in Thursday. Mm-hmm.